Willa, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, fantastic. Well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us again. It's really appreciated. Your last call was one of the best received calls we've ever had. I think I must have received something like 20 or 30 emails from people just really waxing poetic about how useful and wonderful the call was. So for those of you who have joined us this evening, you're in for a very special treat. Let me just give Will a quick introduction. Will is a personal friend of mine and one of the best prescribers we really have in homeopathy. And the reason that I can say that is on a number of occasions I've talked to students of hers at her school and frequently have asked them, you know, how things were at their clinic. And almost always the response I got was that pretty much everybody gets well at her clinic. So I know she's an excellent homeopath. She's a wonderful educator. She's been involved in homeopathy since the early 1990s. She was she served as the first-year core instructor at the Pacific Academy of Homeopathic Medicine. She's also taught for the Oregon Institute of Homeopathy in Medford, Oregon, at the Five Branches Institute in Santa Cruz. She currently practices in Santa Cruz, California, and is the director of the Caduceus Institute, which she'll give us some more information about a little bit later on. So, Willa, thank you so much for joining us. It really is a great pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me again, Kim. My pleasure as well.
So, Willa, you had suggested the topic of the call this evening being the homeopathic treatment of mental emotional disorders. And I thought perhaps we could start by going back to our origins, to the founder, and maybe you could give us a sense of what Hahnemann specifically had to say about mental-emotional diseases.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. One of the interesting things is that, as usual, Hahnemann was way ahead of his time in terms of his perception of psycho-emotional diseases. You have to remember that this was pre-Freud, pre the science of psychology, yet he had a real sensitivity and empathy for people that were in psycho-emotional distress that was very, very unusual for his time. So he starts off basically in paragraph 224 by talking about, he sort of differentiates between two different kinds of mental diseases. And in our kind of way of putting things, we would probably say the same thing with the phrase nature versus nurture, because he basically differentiates between people that have psycho-emotional issues that are organic in nature, that are coming from a physical etiology, is the way that he puts it, a physical disease, versus something that has happened during upbringing. Some of the things that he mentions are bad upbringing, bad habits, perverted morals, lack of mental discipline, superstition, or ignorance. And the way that he says that we can differentiate between these two categories of mental illness or of psycho-emotional distress are that if it is organic, it's going to get worse if you try to fix it with words. And again, this is way before psychology or counseling or psychotherapy. So what he says here is that if it is from these bad upbringing, these bad habits, it can diminish from understanding, well-intentioned exhortations, consoling arguments, and earnest and sensible explanations. So that sounds an awful lot like counseling, and what, you know, we would now call counseling. So you know, he already kind of got that differentiation that we now identify in a slightly different way. Should I move on, and did you want to say anything,
well,
or should
no, you know, to me, this seems like such a critical issue, Willa. I mean, in terms of just making that distinction, and I wonder, you know, how many counselors, if they were just aware of that, how much easier their own practices would be, because they would know, you know, which cases they could actually affect a change in, and which ones really require some type of energetic medicine like homeopathy. So to me, this seems like a very critical issue. I just want some clarification just for a second. What you're saying here, essentially, or what Hahnemann is saying, what you're recapitulating, is that if somebody was brought up to be anti-Semitic, for example, or a racist, homeopathy could not necessarily treat that attitude that they had. Is that what you understand that passage to mean?
Yeah, and he's not at this point getting into whether or not at this point, he's not really getting into, you know, when the remedies work or don't work, but he is saying that sometimes what you really need to do is talk to people and console them and give them understanding and explanations. And if it gets better in that way, then it isn't very deep-seated. Later, he does go into the fact that if it has been there for a long time, it does get pretty deep-seated. So the example that you give of somebody being brought up to be a racist, they still might need a remedy to help get over that, in addition to the counseling, because once it gets pretty deep-seated, it's not so easy to get rid of, just like an acute kind of becoming a chronic.
So what you're saying then is that that false view of the world eventually could result in some type of pathology or mistreatment of the life.
Yes, yes, and he does get into that actually in paragraph 226. He talks about emotional diseases, if they're still recent, because anyway, there are some other categories, and I think the example you're giving is probably more connected with 225, which has to do with when there has been some kind of persistent grief, resentment, anger, humiliation, and repeated exposure to fear and fright. So these are another category of psychic diseases, which he feels that can then go ahead and harm the physical health. So if we're constantly exposed to some kind of emotional stress in childhood, it does become a physical disease. So there are really three different kind of categories here.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, and this very much relates to what I see as, you know, some of the issues that people have with case taking. But let's not talk too much about that right now.
Yeah, I mean, since you brought it up, you know, I know that this is one of the areas that, really is a challenge for many different practitioners and students.
Yes.
How to really get a good case. And, you know, it's always in my opinion, if you don't have a good case, you don't really, you really can't even move forward in terms of helping that patient. So maybe you could give us a sense of, what is actually required to get a good case.
Well, this is very crucial, especially when there are psycho-emotional issues, and I would say 95 to 99% of the time there are, because very few of us are just completely happy, and if we are, we probably don't have a lot of physical issues and wouldn't be going to a homeopath anyway. So usually there's a good mix going on there. And again, you know, the things that Hahnemann really exhorts us to do in terms of really listening to the language of the client is very, very important, and this includes taking notes on the what we would call the simple language of the client, so the kind of words that the person uses, if there's a lot of fire imagery or a lot of water imagery or a lot of violent terms, you know, they're always saying, oh, it kicked my butt, or, you know, it really struck me, and that kind of thing. So it's important to take good notes and to really get that simple language. One of the main things that I always make sure that my students look into, and if they turn in a case to me and this isn't there, I make them go back and get it, is really a sense of what the core feelings were both in childhood and in intimate relationships, because those are the places where you really get a sense of who a person is and what their core issues are. Because when we're in a close, intimate relationship, like with a parent or with a spouse or with a partner, those are really the places where we get to manifest what's really going on inside. Because most of us are pretty well compensated. A lot of people are. And, you know, they talk a good line and look pretty good. But if you really find out what goes on in the intimate relationships, that's where all of the dark stuff comes out. And that's the stuff that needs to be cured. So I always make sure that I get to that, and I'll work with a client until I feel like I've got a good feeling for myself of what their childhood was like and what it's like for them in relationship. In addition to those things, and this is another thing that not all homeopaths do, but I find very useful, is if I feel like I'm not getting the whole picture, because not, you know, all of us have our own blind spots, and if I feel like I'm not able to get the whole picture just by talking to the client, I will ask permission to speak to somebody who knows the client well, such as a spouse or even a therapist who the person might have been working with for a while. And this is a really useful way to get more information. And sometimes, especially if a therapist is really skilled, they can sometimes give you words that are almost like right out of Materia Medica, because if they're just really able to, on a, not in psychological terms like psychobabble, but just on a gut level, sometimes they'll give you some raw imagery. I've had this happen many times where the psychotherapist will just give some raw imagery just from knowing the person really well that just, you know, a remedy just screams out at that point.
Mm. Interesting. Willie, you mentioned about the feeling during childhood and the feeling in intimate relationships, and I'm curious, do you find that oftentimes those feelings are very similar or linked together?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. And then you really get a sense of, you know, the totality of the case, because you see what a person has been carrying around all their lives. And you definitely see the thread that starts to run through the case, and then you know how to look for the remedy at that point.
And Willie, when you're treating somebody for a mental emotional state, how do you feel about them seeking out other types of therapy? You know, counseling, or you know, any. How do you work with that? What is your?
I really encourage people to be in counseling or therapy when they're also doing homeopathy. People are more likely to have already been to a counselor or therapist, but if they aren't and it seems like they need support because of anxiety or depression that they're dealing with, because remember, you know, the remedies can work slowly and, you know, sometimes things come up and things happen in life and people have relapses, so it's really good for people to have some kind of stable emotional support in their life. So I'm very pro-therapist, and that is also a good way to develop relationships with other healing arts professionals in the community, is because, you know, I have a good relationship with a lot of psychotherapists in Santa Cruz because I refer people to them and they refer people to me, people who, you know, don't want to go on antidepressants. I'll often send psychotherapists after I've talked to them maybe one time to, you know, about a mutual client. I'll go ahead and send them a copy of the book Prozac Free by Judith Reichenberg-Ullman. And Bob Ullman, and that's a nice introduction for lay people about homeopathy and how it treats mental emotional conditions. So that's a way, you know, to kind of get connected with psychotherapists, is to educate them a little bit about homeopathy. And I think homeopaths can and should have a very good working relationship with psychotherapists.
Okay. So, Willie, you know, when we spoke earlier about doing this call, you had mentioned that there were certain pitfalls or difficulties that a lot of times happen when, you know, working with clients who have mental emotional disorders.
Yeah.
I thought you'd give us an idea of what are some of the common mistakes or things that you see that, or maybe just give us some ideas on what we can do to, you know, really move along the process smoothly and effectively.
Yeah, well, you know, some of this is one of the hardest things to teach, and it takes a little while to see, but I'll try to describe it as best I can. And a lot of this comes down to what Hahnemann is talking about in the Organon in terms of organic diseases versus diseases that are caused by, you know, for example, prolonged fright or grief or psycho-emotional childhood trauma, mostly in childhood. Basically, one of the key things to understand when dealing with somebody is this a person who is in their feelings and can be in their feelings, or is this a person who is disassociated and not in their feelings? And sometimes it can be a little tricky to pick up on that, but it's absolutely key in terms of understanding the person and understanding what group of remedies the person might need. So, for example, if we're going to talk about this in terms of rubrics, for example, some of the rubrics that you might see represented in a case where people are really disassociated include, like, laughs at serious matters, remedies like anacardium. They're very disassociated and not in the feelings, and there's a kind of split in the personality. Other ones like unfeeling and hard-hearted, people who just aren't in touch with how they feel. Sometimes the language can also give you a clue a little bit here. People sometimes talk about themselves in the third person when they start talking about sensitive subjects. Like they might say, oh, you feel really angry when somebody treats you like that. It's like they kind of disassociate themselves from their feelings. And so it's important to be able to tell, and it's more of a feeling thing, because people can sometimes sound like they're talking about their feelings, but are they really in their feelings? Can they really access what it felt like in childhood or what it feels like in relationships? Or are they talking about it more like, you know, they're in the third person, like it's somebody else that's having these things? So I find it very, very important to really go to a heart level with people when it comes to this kind of thing, because this is a kind of perception that I don't think you can do mentally so well, but it is something that in order to get a good case, you have to be able to really sense on a sort of emotional level yourself. And sometimes this involves the homeopath, you know, doing some personal development to be able to get to that level.
So, Willie, you said that there's, if somebody's really in their feeling, that that would indicate certain remedies as opposed to people who were not in their feeling. Could you give us some more concrete examples? I think this is the information might be very useful to people in practice.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll give you a few examples, some examples here. I have one client who's a health professional herself. And she grew up with tremendous trauma from her mother. And other homeopaths had actually given her remedies like natrum carbonicum and sepia and remedies that are actually usually a lot more emotionally connected. But what I sensed from her was just a tremendous level of anxiety and inability to really access those feelings. And I gave her anacardium because there was a lot of that kind of conflict, internal conflict about being one way and being another way, feeling extremely isolated. That's another key thing. People who are, you know, more on that mental, more of an emotional level will tend to be more in the rubric forsaken, for example. They feel forsaken. They feel rejected. They feel left out. Whereas for her, it was much more profound. It was the sub-rubric of that, which is sensation of isolation. So there's a difference between feeling rejected and abandoned and kind of that hurt feeling that comes from being left alone versus this more profound sense of isolation. And that's really what I got, was that the deepest level for her was this amazingly profound sense of being isolated and alone, you know, alone in the universe. And that's a much more deep level and much more of a mental level than an emotional level. This is the level where you also get into more of the delusions. And I use the delusion rubrics quite a bit. Now, people don't always come out and say, I saw, you know, a black thing in the side of my vision or something like that, but they may use language describing, it seems that everything is black, for example. So sometimes using those delusion rubrics can be very, very useful in these kinds of very deep cases. So anyway, this is somebody that I gave anacardium to, and she just had absolutely profound results. Her big thing had been that she's been an insomniac for her whole life, basically, and she finally started sleeping. And it's interesting, she went from being a very high-energy person to a very tired person, and I think it's going to take her many, many months. It's already been, I think, about eight months or so. Let's see. Oh, it's been... Yeah, it's been almost a year, 6/28, so it's been about 11 months now, and she's just starting to climb out of that feeling of tiredness after being anxious and sleepless most of her life. So that's an example of somebody with more of the deep level who needed a deeper level remedy. On the other hand, another client who grew up in an alcoholic family and had some allergies and had some emotional issues, you know, around what happened in her family, had some depression as a child, as a teenager, actually. she didn't have that deep kind of stuff. She was somebody who was very emotionally available in a certain way, but she was also somebody who would hide her feelings and not show a lot. But if you actually talk to her, you realize that the feelings were there and they were, you know, they were accessible for her. So she is somebody I gave Natrum Muriaticum to, and with the Natrum Mur, her allergies cleared up, her depression went away, she went off her antidepressants, and, you know, she's basically got a whole new life going on for herself. So those are examples of, you know, one on one hand, more of that deep mental disturbance because of more severe abuse and more prolonged abuse, and then a lighter case where the person, where things cleared up much more easily, and it wasn't so much on that mental level, but more on the emotional level.
Mm-hmm. Willie, you mentioned sepia as being a remedy that would not fall into the category as being as disconnected, and I thought that was interesting because I think a lot of us have the impression that it is a remedy that can be very disconnected from, you know, the love of their family members. Maybe you can comment on that a little bit, or
sure. Well, you know, sepia absolutely can be just, you know, irritated and not feel love of family members, but often it clears up pretty easily. And it doesn't seem to be due so much to abuse as hormonal imbalance. Mm. So, you know, somebody who gets kind of deadened emotionally because of hormonal imbalance or exhaustion is more of a temporary thing. It doesn't quite go as deeply, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So these cases, like the anacardium case, the people that are really just can't feel anymore at all.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of child abuse in these cases, or?
Yeah. There's a lot of child abuse in a lot of cases because there's a lot of child abuse. Period. And specifically, of course, child abuse, severe child abuse, can lead to even very, very profound states like dissociative identity disorder, or as it used to be called, multiple personality disorder. So extremely severe abuse does create a sense of dissociation, because when things are very painful, you check out. And when you check out, you kind of leave your body in a certain way, and that's when you get real disconnected from your feelings and from your emotions. Mm. So you do see a lot of that in severe cases of child abuse. One of the things, and I think this is an important thing that people might want to make a note of, I put sexual abuse on my intake form as part of the history that I request before I take the case. It's right there along with, you know, asthma and eczema, and, you know, I basically have a question saying, you know, do you have any family history of any of the following, family or personal history of any of the following? And I have sexual abuse sort of right in the middle of all these physical diseases. And that has actually been incredibly useful for me. I always go to that page of the intake form and look at it and check up on that before I start taking the case, because I want to know before I take the case if the person has been abused. It's not absolutely foolproof, because sometimes people will put down that they were abused and it'll turn out, you know, that their uncle tried to kiss them at a wedding when they were 19 years old, but they're somebody who feels that was a form of abuse, and so they put it down. And on the other hand, sometimes people don't put it down, and it turns out they were abused because they don't want to talk about it, or they're not ready to talk about it. But in general, it's been extremely helpful to know about the abuse before I start taking the case.
Now, you know, I know these abuse cases can be very difficult. Are there certain things that you do, particularly when you've got somebody and you know that there has been some form of sexual or child abuse in the past?
Well, you know, creating a safe place, a safe environment where the person feels comfortable talking about it at whatever level that they want to talk about it at. I will ask questions not directed at tell me what physically happened, because I don't think that's an appropriate way to question a client. But I will ask them, you know, what was the feeling you have you know, at that time? Were you terrified? Were you enraged? You know, how did you feel inside when this was happening, and how did you feel afterwards toward the person, et cetera? So I will focus on their, you know, their feeling experience rather than the actual physical event, because that's what I need to know as a homeopath, and I think it's a lot less invasive than asking other kinds of questions.
Willa, have you found that there are certain remedies that, I know we don't treat this way, specifics, but there are certain remedies that seem to crop up in cases of either sexual or child abuse, or even groups of remedies? I know sometimes the lax are talked about as remedies that can be used. Have you had this type of experience or seen anything?
Well, yeah, I think the dissociated remedies really crop up a lot in child abuse. And the best rubric for that is that unfeeling, hard-hearted rubric that I mentioned before, and also laughs at serious matters, because these are both strong signs of disassociation. Some other signs are the rubric mutilates themselves. Sometimes mutilation is part of it, and it might even be a mild form, you know, of mutilation, that they just kind of do bad things to themselves. But, platina, stramonium, tarantula, those are some of the remedies that seem to come up quite a bit when there's been bad abuse. Anacardium, even mercury. So I'll look more at those kinds of remedies when I see some dissociation going on during the case taking.
Now, Will, I know, you know, when we're treating mental emotional conditions, oftentimes people are on various types of medication, and sometimes they're on, you know, some pretty heavy duty, you know, antidepressant or.
Yes.
You know, how do you deal with this? Because I know this can be challenging for a lot of us.
Yeah. Well, for me, because I use LM potencies, I don't have a problem with people being on medications. Several years ago, I don't know quite when this happened, but when I first started my practice about 14 years ago, it was easier because psychiatrists and doctors were basically usually prescribing one antidepressant at a time. And then somewhere along the line there, they discovered that antidepressants seemed to work better when people were taking two or even three. So they give one, then they'll give another one to kind of counteract some of the side effects of the other one. And so people now come to me, and it's not unusual for them to be on either two or three antidepressants. And some of them are harder to get off of than others, but for sure two or three are a lot harder to get off of than one. So it's been more challenging. I think as homeopaths we are more challenged if the person has the goal to get off the antidepressants, because they're going to have to wean themselves off one by one. So it's kind of a long, laborious process. I would never suggest that anybody go cold turkey off three antidepressants at the same time. And in fact, of course, excuse me?
Sorry, Willis, go ahead.
I always tell people that the person who has to help you go off the antidepressants or any medication is the person who put you on them. So I suggest that they go back to the doctor or the health provider that gave them the medication in the first place and find out how to get off it.
So basically, and they just do one medication at a time is how they do it.
Yeah.
They don't wean them
all
off simultaneously. They just do one.
No. Yeah, one at a time. One at a time. The one that they somehow feel isn't doing as much as the other ones, and just, you know, take it slowly. So that has actually become more of a challenge. Sometimes people don't want to go off their medications. Or it may be many months of being on homeopathy before they feel safe enough, because these medications can often be a literal lifesaver with people who are feeling suicidal, having severe depression. You know, they don't want to lose that good feeling for anything.
Sure.
So sometimes they have to really, you know, trust the remedy. And I don't think that it should be done any other way. That's absolutely the proper way to do it, is at the pace that the client is comfortable with.
Willa, have you found that there's any medications that are more difficult to work with than others? Or?
You know, a lot of them have side effects that are that come up when you're coming off of them. One that springs to mind is Effexor. That tends to be kind of difficult, causes causes some physical issues as you're going off of it. So, yeah, there's a lot that comes up when people start going off the medications, just as side effects from the withdrawals. If people want to do it, it can definitely be done, and I have lots of success helping people, get off the medications once we've got a good remedy and it's been working well for them.
I don't know if if this is really appropriate for this call, but I don't know if you have any tips or anything. I know that there's a lot of case management issues when you're weaning somebody off of medication. Different symptoms come up, and I don't know if you have any tips you want to give the audience, before we move on.
Well, the main tip I would say is to find a really good remedy and stick with it and manage the remedy really well. Go up in potency when you need to. I don't find that I need to go switching around remedies to deal with side effects. If the remedy is good, it's gonna keep working and the side effects will eventually go away.
So, Willa, when you do give the remedy, you do find this correct remedy and you it really feels like it has been helping the patient. Are there other things that you suggest in mental emotional cases, counseling, any other therapies? What do you tell the patient? And maybe you give us an idea of.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I feel that nutrition and diet is absolutely crucial. And it's very hard to feel good in any way if you're not eating properly. So right along with the homeopathic remedy, I always do some nutritional counseling. Omega-3 fatty acids are very, very good for depression. They've been found to work better than Prozac in studies in Europe. And, we're talking basically about fish oils here. So, there are things that people can do that can actually help on a nutritional level, and I will definitely make sure that people get off junk food and start eating whole foods and make sure that they have good supplies of essential fatty acids. From my favorite supplement is cod liver oil, and most of my clients take cod liver oil because not only does it provide the omega-3 fatty acids that are in fish oil, it also has the vitamins A and D in it that are only found in the cod liver oil, because it's from the liver of the fish, so it has these vitamins that are also very, very crucial for health, both mental health and also physical health.
Willa, have you treated seasonally affective disorders? I know you live in Southern California.
Yeah.
But have you seen seasonally affective disorders?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And what's the how's homeopathy been with that?
It works. It definitely helps. These people come in when it starts to rain and when it starts to get dark here, and I've definitely seen homeopathy address seasonal affective disorder. Light therapy is also good, and it's good to do both if you can. You can get the special lights that help to alleviate it as well.
The full spectrums, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the full spectrum lights.
Great. And also another question that some other people had asked me specifically to ask you is, when you're working with somebody who is suicidally depressed, a lot of people are concerned that if they give a remedy and the person gets an aggravation, that they might take their life.
Yeah.
What is your experience with this? Do you have any protocols? Have you had that experience? What do you do to ensure that the patient's safety? Maybe give us some tips.
That's an excellent question, yeah. Well, if anybody seems suicidal, and a good way to find that out is to ask, are you suicidal? You should just come out and ask it if you have any suspicion at all. You should ask if they're suicidal. And if somebody is having suicidal feelings, they need to be in the care of a mental health professional. And I will generally make that a condition if somebody is having real issues like that and having some suicidal feelings, that if they want to do homeopathy, then they need to be seeing a therapist regularly, because I can't take that kind of responsibility. I'm not a psychologist. I don't have those skills. And I also only see people every 5 or 6 weeks, so I can't monitor these kinds of things. They need to be seeing somebody every week or twice a week or whatever they need to be doing for this to be a safe environment. It's really a pity that we don't have the kinds of mental health clinics or hospitals where we could actually have a residential component where people could go stay and have other kinds of therapies. And this is actually something I've worked on in Santa Cruz with a nonprofit named Elysium about, you know, holistic approaches, including homeopathy for people in, you know, psycho-emotional crisis. Because what the traditional establishment gives these days is not as bad, but close to it. Almost as bad, almost as degrading and scary for people as what was happening in Hahnemann's times.
What about posology protocols? You start them on LMs or Cs, or when you deal with somebody who's potentially suicidal, is there anything that you do differently?
Oh, if suicidal, definitely LMs.
Yeah.
And they can get very great improvement very quickly. There's one potency scale that I've had really, really interesting results with that some of the people on the call may not be so familiar with, and those are the C4s. And this is something that's been...
Is it Elise Timmermans? Stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. I had been to a seminar with Elise and learned about them and started using them and started having some really profound results with people who had already responded well to the remedy, and we just kind of wanted to go a little deeper with it. I never use them right off the bat, but if somebody's been on an LM for a while and they've responded well to the remedy, and then there's some kind of crisis that happens, that's the point where I'll give a C4. And I now have a kit of about 40 remedies, so I'm able to use them a little bit more. For the first few years I had them, I only had 4 remedies, but they were good remedies. They were anacardium, stramonium, pulsatilla, and what was the other one? Lachesis. And I got a lot of use just out of those 4. So now I'm...
Some of your cases?
Yeah, I did a lot for a lot of people just with those 4 remedies. So now I got a set of them, of 40 of them, and I'm starting to use them more and more. But again, I use them, you know, as a sort of crisis management thing, but people have really described very profound shifts when they take the C4s.
It's 4X, is that correct? Is that the price of the difference?
It's triturated 4 times to the 4C level instead of 3 times to the 3C level.
Hmm.
So it's taking it to another level. That's how Elise and the Germans, I guess, who've developed it see it as working more on a soul level, because it's, you know, sort of like mind, body, how would it go? Body, emotions, mind, and then, you know, soul or spirit or something like that. I may not be representing them completely right, but it has to do with kind of going to a deeper level of things.
Mm.
And Elise does talk about how it can be useful in, you know, borderline personality disorder and other kinds of what are really, you know, personality disorders, which again is more of that organic level, deeper level pathology rather than just being depressed or anxious or that kind of thing.
Well, where can people acquire these 4C potencies?
The C4 remedies? I got mine from Annika. What is Annika's last name?
Hoagland.
Yes, thank you. You know who I'm talking about. She's in Berkeley. And I might be able to figure out.
We probably don't want to give her number out, but maybe
yeah.
You or something.
She's. I think it's called Homeopathy West. If people type in Homeopathy West into Google, they'll find the website where she advertises the seminars with Elise and the tapes and she does. Yeah, there she is. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, probably we don't want to give out any too much about that. But, yeah, just look for Homeopathy West.
Don't want to call me up and getting mad at me, you know.
Right.
Okay. Hey, so, okay, listen, I know we're running short on time here. I have one final question.
Okay.
Because when you do these, when you're treating people who've got even more serious mental emotional disorders, I don't know if you've worked with people who've got schizophrenia and things like that. I guess that's depending on how you classify that. But what kind of results do you expect to see after the first follow-up if you've given the right remedy?
Well, if it's that kind of deep level, it's difficult. I have worked with schizophrenia. It is difficult. It I think ideally if we were going to work with schizophrenia and deep pathology like psychosis, we would want to really have people in a facility where the lifestyle was taken care of and was healthy and the food was healthy. There are just so many variables, and I think that these kind of people need support on multiple levels.
Mm.
So I've seen shifts happen with schizophrenia. I've seen people respond to remedies and get more grounded, but I've also seen them relapse. So I haven't found a key to treating schizophrenia with homeopathy. However, in general, this is where just when you're treating people, you know, with depression or anxiety, it can still be very helpful to be in communication with the person's therapist. There have been several times where I was ready to change the remedy because I thought nothing was happening, and I called the therapist, and the therapist said, oh, no, 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 don't change the remedy. You know, I'm seeing shifts in how the therapy is going. And lo and behold, the therapist was right, and I almost left several times a good remedy because of getting some advice from a therapist who could see the bigger picture better than I could, because it was somebody they had been working with for years and that they were meeting with every week and all that. So I suggest being a little bit patient with the process, especially if you do a follow-up at 5 weeks like I do. If you're not seeing too many results, still try to be patient. If you have a therapist to check in with the therapist before you make your decision.
Well, I'd like to give everyone else an opportunity to ask some questions now. But
okay.
Before I do that, Willa, I thought perhaps you could just let us know a little bit about the school that you run and how people could contact you if they want more information.
Great.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to. Yeah, I have a 2.5-year distance learning program in homeopathy. We do clinical training that is live in Santa Cruz 2 to 3 days a month, but we also have clinical hours that are available in conjunction with the homeopathic symposium. And the website is www.homeopathytraining.org, and you can get my email off there as well. If you haven't been there for a while, I suggest you take a look. We're just putting up a page that describes some of our recent graduates who are now starting up some successful practices. Right now we have 2 of them up, and we're going to put up another 3 hopefully this week. So you'll get to see what some of our graduates are doing with their practices. Also, we do have an email list. If on the front page of the website, you can put your email address in there, and then you'll be notified of, you know, any events we're having or different things that are happening. We send something out maybe once a month or once every 2 months. So I'd invite people to go look at the website and see what our graduates are doing and check out the program if they're interested in any kind of distance education.
Thank you so much. I mean, this was just really a really wonderful and very informative and useful call. Willa, thank you so much for joining us again. Let me go ahead and unmute the lines and let other people ask some questions.
Yeah. Fun. Welcome.
Can people hear me?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. So does somebody have a question for Willa?
Yes. One thing, I want the repeat address of www.homeopathy and then?
Oh, homeopathytraining.org.
Okay.
Homeopathytraining.org.
That's right.
Well, Willa, I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
My name is Joe. I've been in practice about a year, and it's been my experience that aggravations are pretty regular, but I still get kind of concerned, mostly out of I'm unsure how things are following up, but it seems like all the symptoms that they experience are theirs, you know, not symptoms unfamiliar to them, but sometimes I have an aggravation that goes to, I don't have a lot of them, but they can go on for 2 weeks, either that or, especially when I'm doing LM1s, like with fibromyalgia and heavy medicated people, they aggravate for a while, they get better, I redose them again once it starts to decline, they aggravate again, and it seems to be this up and down path, but with steady improvement all along. And I'm just curious of your experience with aggravations and just any insight that you've
well, I have them. The nice thing about LMs is I will have them dilute it down until the aggravations are gone. So I think you can eliminate aggravations by going to the second or third or fourth cup. I have one client who discovered that the third cup and the fifth cup don't work, but the fourth cup twice a week was perfect.
Wow.
So she figured that out on her own. But I gave her the guidelines and said, this is what you can try, you know, because she's somebody who's very, very sensitive. She responds to every remedy I give her, reacts, I would say, to every remedy I give her, and this is the protocol that she discovered works for her.
But I have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay. In cases of, like, severe manic depression, when someone just swings from a mania phase into severe depression,
mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering what you see. Do you see the same remedy running through those two starkly different states of being? Or
yes.
Do you find that you need to switch the remedy when they switch?
No. Usually it's one remedy, and you can look in the rubrics, you know, moods alternating and moods changeable. For some ideas there. Lachesis comes up quite a bit for bipolar and, you know, manic, bipolar disorder, I think is what they call it these days. So, yeah, you don't generally use, I will find one remedy that runs through.
I'm curious, Willa, have you seen lithium as a remedy in manic depressive disorders?
You know, I haven't given it as a remedy.
No.
I've given hydrogen.
Okay.
Which is hydrogen is just above lithium on the periodic table.
Right.
And hydrogen, what'd you say?
You've had good results with hydrogen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hydrogen definitely covers that split thing because, you know, hydrogen's one electron and one proton.
Right.
So it tends to go into the yin and the yang.
I have a question, Willa.
Yes.
Do you always start with a LM1, and how high have you gone with them? How high in potency?
I generally start with an LM1 or 2, and I've gone up to, I've never actually hit 30, but I've come pretty close. I think 30 is as high as they're made. I've come to like 27, 28.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you found any particular level when you see a pattern that suggest that you switch over to the C4s?
No, I do that more. I don't switch over so much because sometimes people will go back to using the LMs as well. But it's sort of when I get to a sort of moment of truth where the person is in crisis and they need more. And this kind of relates to, you know, the last call I did when I was talking about LMs and how I kind of use C potencies. Well, sometimes I use C4 potencies as well in those same kind of circumstances where people just need something else and need to make a real big shift. I've seen it work really well.
Do you still repeat them almost daily?
Which?
Your LMs.
Yes.
And do you find the same for the C4 or is that much?
Oh, no. The C4 is a one dose.
One dose. Thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, Lily, I've got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. I've got a patient, actually, and who was so much fitting, this mercury, and that is a dissociated feeling and all that, and he has got so much pathology, and mercury seemed to do a little touch, but only it was in potency, like C3, C30, C200. But can I give LM potency or C4? Because it's so much pathology, and he puts a picture of mercury so much, but there is a bad upbringing, and he's satisfied with what had all happened. But he just says, "Oh, my parents treated me like he treated. I never had my childhood, but he had got colitis, and he's Epstein virus syndrome. He's so much that Epstein virus is in my body, and he had quite a bit of mercury picture. But I gave some C30 always." So I can try LM potencies or C4?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not recommending that anybody just start off the bat with C4s. I think it's something to kind of move into slowly. At least when I talked to Elise when I was at the seminar a few years ago, that's how she was using them as well. She was using them on cases that had already responded to the remedy, but were not responding to the regular potencies anymore. So I'm not at all recommending that you just go ahead and give somebody a C4. But in that case with a lot of physical, pathology, I would go with an LM.
Yes, LM, that's right.
Definitely with an LM. And then, you know, later, if you've seen really, really good results over a long period of time, then consider a C4.
Yes. Now, this any associated remedies you can suggest? Platina, stramonium, mercury, tarantula?
Well, look in those rubrics that I mentioned.
Okay.
Because those are the rubrics that really contain a lot of the disassociated remedies. And then go back and look at the materia medica of those remedies. And,
okay.
And I think you'll start to see the pattern there.
Well, I'd like to take a training from you, Elise, if you can. I'll go on your website.
Yeah, go ahead and take a look at the website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that like people like who actually I'm not very young to have that so much 2.5 years training. Have you got a smaller training?
No, but if you're already in practice, you might want to start with one of the more advanced modules. But maybe we could talk about this later. Are there other people that have questions?
Yes. What about somebody who's not only has a lot of physical sexual abuse, but also other kinds of traumas as a child? Do you still find you use one remedy, or would you have to go up two different layers first?
Well, you know, it really depends. Most of the time when you take a case like that, you're going to see a thread running through. You know, if people experienced a lot of terror and fright in childhood, in adulthood it's probably manifesting more like anxiety. As long as the thread is the same, you're not going to necessarily be using different remedies. It's usually one remedy, and it's the remedy that goes way back to that initial trauma. When the initial, you know, the initial wound or the initial trauma happened. And because that's the core state that the person has been living out of all their lives. Does that make sense? Is anybody there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, I hope that makes some sense to you, because definitely it's usually one remedy, and it's that remedy for the original trauma.
Do you use opium much?
I have used opium successfully in cases of very, very profound fright and disassociation. And again, with the remedy opium, you can definitely see that association between the profound fright and then the numbness that comes, the emotional numbness and the out-of-body type experiences and the shutting down. But that's another very good remedy for deep trauma.
Willa?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm curious, have you ever used Asarum Europum for people who have got out-of-body experiences or dissociative disorders or anything like that?
No, have you?
I have used it once, yeah, for somebody who had an out-of-body experience. I was just curious if anybody else had seen that.
No.
You haven't seen it. Okay, just thought I would ask. Hold on.
That's interesting.
I had a question about how you design your analysis in the sense of composition of theme symptoms, general symptoms, other specifics, if you use specific strategies. I don't know if that's a conversation onto itself, but if there's anything you could comment on that.
Could you repeat that? I'm not quite sure I understand your question. Case analysis, you mean?
Yeah, well, case analysis, like what the composition of, you know, people use so many rubrics, and I was wondering if you have a clear theme, if you tend to run all your rubrics into the clear theme, if you flavor it with, you know, a general or two, or if you have a general approach, just different strategies, if you transfer from a Boeinghausen to a classic theme approach to kind of like sonic realm sensations, or if you have any.
Yeah. Well, I try to do it according to what the vital force is saying, is how the vital force is speaking to me. If there are strong general symptoms, I'm going to put them in for sure. You know, if it's more that there is this core feeling or delusion going on, I'm going to try to get it, you know, repertorize that, find the rubrics for that. So it just completely depends on what comes out in the case and where the vital force really seems to be speaking loudly and expressing itself, because that's the language, you know, the symptoms are the language of the vital force. So reading them
and reading them clearly is the most important thing to do.
Yes. So one final question?
Yes, may I ask? I've been working with a variety of very special needs population, paraplegic, quadriplegic, cerebral palsy, and I find that, as you said, working with the essential fatty acids and nutrition, because I also have a degree in that, helps to bring them to a very special level. When they are going through the crises of coming to terms, like with some of the cerebral palsy children, they're now getting voices and having a voice.
Mm.
When they start this process of actually voicing their opinion, as well as some of my quadriplegic and paraplegic people, they come to a set point where they feel that they can do something about their health, and they want to be a part of it. So then the depression starts to set in.
Mm.
So I get them to really try to talk about this, but I'm having difficulty saying, are we treating the voice that became silent, or are we treating the voice that now needs to be heard to allow connection, brain connection, because they're getting healing now from some of the visceral work that I've been doing. So I'm trying to figure out how do I help them with their voice and work with that depression. And I'm saying, under which management do we do? Is it the active voice or the fearful of coming to new space?
Mm. Wow, that is a very profound question. I feel like we need to talk about it more for me to be able to even answer it. Do you have any thoughts about what she asked, Kim? Maybe he's not there. Are you there, Kim?
Did you ask me something?
Well, I just asked you if I was just saying that was an extremely profound question, and I don't feel like I can just answer it. I probably need to understand a little bit more about
it. To answer that question, didn't
it? Yeah. Well, I'd need to understand more about the population she's working with and
yeah.
That sort of thing. But I really respect the kind of work that she's doing, and I think that's a wonderful, wonderful gift to people. So if you do want to email me about that, go ahead.
What's your email address for?
Willa, W-I-L-L-A, at homeopathyhome, as if one word, homeopathyhome.net. So it's Willa at homeopathyhome.net. Or you can go to the website and email me from there.
Willa, thank you so much again. This was a fantastic call, rich and very wonderful information. Let me unmute and let everyone say thank you personally. Give Willa a big thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Well,
I enjoyed talking with you, Kim, and
okay.
Talking with everybody.
All right, talk to you soon. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.